You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. After nine, waiting on the gunner. I'm not sure where I actually ran across this story, but there's a story in the Washington Post today with the following headline. I got a black cloud over me, I'm telling you. A veteran died as a nurse's aide played video games instead of checking on him, a report says. 3 days after Bill Nutter was found dead in his bed at the Bedford VA Medical Center in 2016, a staff member from the Massachusetts hospital told his wife that his heart had stopped and there was nothing more that could have been done. But later his wife, Carol, learned a bit more about what happened from a doctor who said the hospital fell short in caring for her husband, she told the Boston Globe. It turns out the nurse's aide responsible for monitoring him overnight didn't check on Bill Nutter on the night he died. Instead, she was playing video games on her computer, citing a person with first-hand knowledge. And when a nurse discovered Nutter dead the next morning, the hospital's internal report shows she announced it to her boss with a crude gesture signifying a slit throat. The Department of Veteran Affairs, IG, launched a criminal investigation with the U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI to identify how the system may have failed Nutter, according to the Boston Globe. Nutter was a retired police detective. He was a door gunner in Vietnam. While serving in Vietnam, he was exposed to Agent Orange, which led to health problems. His diabetes led to the amputation of both legs. He also suffered from a serious heart condition that could send him into cardiac arrest at any moment. Like, you know, when does it stop? When does it stop? Immediately after Nutter's death, the Bedford VA Medical Center reassigned Patricia Wabel, the aide who reportedly failed to check on him, to a cafeteria job. The nurse who made the cutthroat gesture was still in her probationary period. She was terminated. Wabel initially insisted and signed paperwork claiming she had checked on Nutter as required. She eventually admitted the truth after she learned that the hospital camera showed her never leaving her desk during her shift. It was only after the Globe contacted the VA last month that the agency suspended Wabel with pay. VA Secretary David Shulkin, his office plans to have her permanently removed, the Globe reported. The family did not learn the full details of Mr. Nutter's death until the Boston Globe began investigating. Now they are reportedly considering taking legal action against the VA. The Globe also reported that several whistleblowers, employees, and families of veterans have brought forth a slew of complaints about the Bedford VA Medical Center, how patients quickly deteriorate after being admitted, how some veterans in long-term care are left in soiled clothes or without food for hours, how buildings are infested with asbestos. A spokesman for Shulkin said in a statement to the Globe that the secretary has made very clear the VA will hold employees accountable when the facts demonstrate that they have failed to live up to the high standards taxpayers expect from us. And as you might imagine, politicians are outraged. Elizabeth Warren, who's a Democrat from Massachusetts, this is a disgrace. Our nations deserve better. Our veterans deserve better, I'm sorry. Seth Moulton, former Marine, who's a representative in Massachusetts. This is unbelievable, and yet entirely so unbelievable, and yet not entirely so unbelievable given some of the things I've seen myself at the VA. Bridget Darton, Mr. Nutter's daughter, questioned why the hospital took so long to remove the nurse's aide at fault. She wondered why the family had to learn the full story about what happened through a reporter. As a government employee and someone who has deployed for the U.S., it's very sad that our vets are treated this way and that we only found out about this by a journalist and not the VA. Ms. Darton said, "People need to understand it's not about his health or how sick he was. It's about the care he didn't receive from the VA." Because they were playing computer games. I don't know. A couple more stories and a couple of emails. Mike, I appreciate your comments this morning. Like most people who have served, not just Marines, although I am one, I could not believe the stuff that I was seeing on television. And I will say that I partially hold the president at fault. He doesn't seem to be able to get out of his own way. And I think the chief of staff's advice to him not to make these calls was prudent. I don't think president should make these calls. Even if their intentions are for the best, I don't think they should make these calls. And I hope he doesn't in the future. There's too many things that can go wrong. If he does everything great, then it was just okay. And if he does something wrong, or it comes out wrong, or it wasn't received right, all those things that can happen, then it becomes a political issue. And unlike you, I am not surprised one bit what that representative did. You seem to have higher expectations for politicians than I certainly do. I find them a contemptible lot. One needs to look around this to see the incredible spending that gets done, the lack of a financial plan to keep us solvent, the permanent deficit that gets run by our federal government. Where, oh, where are the adults, as you say? Joining me is Michael Musselman. Gunner, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on, Mac?
Nothing.
You sound better today.
I'm faking it. I didn't take your advice and have it. I don't have any booze in the house. I had some beer, but I didn't drink that. So, I didn't self-medicate last night. So I just watched the Dodger game. I just watched the Dodger game. And then
watched that blowout.
And then after that, well, it could have been worse. I could have been a Cubs fan. That would have made it worse. And then I did a little reading, and then I went to bed. So that was my night. I alluded previously. I was not in a good spot yesterday after some of the stuff that I'd seen on television. Regardless of my knowing General Kelly and being friends with him, the fact that a Gold Star family this happens is disgusting. And we didn't talk about it a whole lot yesterday. For exactly the reason, and I use the words, you know, Gold Star families are the holy of holies, and you know, in terms of what it is Catholics talk about, it's the inner sanctum. It's whatever they need, we do. It's not about certainly us, or it's only about them, their loss, and how we can, in some way, shape, or form, maybe ease the pain for a short period of time so that they know how much we care. That's all. And when you see it treated like this, I don't know.
Yeah, so, what's sacred anymore?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, what is, and then Mike and I, so I sent out a relatively angry text to some of my friends, some of my battle buddies last night. Mike called right away. Hey, what's going on? I said I'm not happy, man. I am not happy. He said, oh really? Couldn't tell that from the text. But you know, Mike, and that's what it's like. Is there no level that an American politician won't squat to? You know, to do the wrong thing for their own political advantage, and I guess the answer.
Yeah.
I guess the answer is no.
No, they're scum of the earth, man. They are what's the pinnacle of what is wrong with this country and where it's going, and we allow it to happen. We think it's okay because everybody has their right to voice their opinion. So that's the part that angers me.
Somebody sent me an email a little while ago after I got done talking about this. You just hate her because you're a conservative. She's not. And let me just explain for those of you who I will give her the benefit of the doubt that she was there for all the right reasons. I will give her the benefit of the doubt that she was there when the phone call was going on and listened with no malice. Okay? I will give her every one of those benefits. And so then what happens is, and I will even go a step further for her. Let's just say that something the president said wasn't received in the right way. That his wife didn't understand it or confused her. What are her choices? She can pick up the phone and call the chief of staff after the phone call and say, hey, I don't know that went over the way it should. He said this and she was kind of taken aback by that. To which the White House could then remedy that situation. Or you can decide to go out in front of a television camera and make it a political issue. It is unforgivable what she did.
It has nothing to do with political affiliation.
Right.
It's straight up wrong and right.
And those
that don't get it, they've never served. Right. They don't know. They've never had that loss. They've never experienced that. You know? And for a guy like John Kelly to get on, who is a Gold Star family member, you know, who has been in civil service since, you know, he was a teenager.
Right.
It's just, yeah. Same thing. People said the same thing. You know, oh, you're just hating on her because she's a liberal. No, I'm hating on her because she's just scum.
Yeah. No, what's the right thing to do for that family? Did that in some way, shape, or form make her doing that? Did that lessen the burden on that family? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that woman's going to walk into her closet tonight, and she's going to smell her husband, okay? That's what she's living through, right? and she's going to go, she's going to look at the casualty, you know, assistance officer, and she's going to ask him, could you please look at his remains and tell us if we should, if it's okay if we look? That's the kind of shit that they're doing.
Yeah.
And so how does what she did, regardless of political affiliation, help that family? The answer, it doesn't. It makes it all worse. So it's indefensible. I mean, as a representative of the federal government, which is what she was when she went there, right, she has a responsibility. If in some way, shape, or form the president screwed it up, she doesn't have a responsibility to her party first. She has a responsibility to that family first and to lessen the burden. And there's no... Yeah. I mean, guys, come on. And so that's what's so, you know, so discouraging is that the political leaders of this country, I mean, it's pathetic. It's pathetic. What are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing? What are those beeps?
Well, that's laundry. You know, here's a classic example, Mac. Yeah. And, you know, and this guy's a conservative, and he's a Republican. John McCain, the shit he pulls under the voice of, oh, he's been through it, he's done it. He's just another shithead just like the rest of them.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. You know what? I mean, I think we all would, you know, we would all have... honor Senator McCain's service and certainly the time he spent as a prisoner of war. But I'll tell you what, he doesn't, and Mike's been a part of this. Mike, I mean, for instance, what happened in Niger? First of all, the four guys that were a part of this are dead. So they can't tell you what happened.
Right.
You don't have a major force in the area that can go there and occupy it and figure out what happened. Explain to everybody how hard, I mean, when you try to piece this stuff after together, but you got to get people to the region, you got to get them together, then you got to move there. They've got to, obviously, they need to be armed, right, in case some other shit happens, right? You don't want more people to get killed. It doesn't happen in 24, 48, 72 hours, you know? And so I'm watching this. And we both have been in that business of trying to get answers, and it just, you sit here and you shake your head and you go, good God, man, just stop, please.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right, so
I mean, go ahead.
No, I don't know. Let's change the subject. What do you want to talk about?
Man, it's a nice day out today. It's chilly.
Do you like cold weather?
I like it cool, yeah. I mean, weather doesn't bother me. My wife was complaining last night about, she said, we were talking about something. She goes, we should move to Montana. I said, yeah, right. Like, you would really, you know, go for Montana. She's like, whoa, what? And I said, she goes, the summers are here so hot. And I said, well, okay. I mean, the summers can get hot in Montana, too. And the winters in Montana can get freezing cold. And you don't like the freezing cold. Just, you know, and it's just this, we were kind of going back and forth. She kept saying, well, you know, and I said, well, this is typical, the grass is greener. No, it's not. And, well, that's not what I'm saying. And I'm like, oh.
You'd be up there with Montana Man. You could go, like, ride around the ranch and help out. You could be one of the farmhands.
Yeah, right. That would work.
Help out. You could be like the head farmhand, right? Report to him every morning for instructions, and then you could like be in charge of the interns.
No, it's not my dream there.
That's not going to happen. Maybe you could let I don't know, maybe be some kind of special consultant on the ranch or something, maybe.
Not feeling it? Nope, not feeling it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not a big fan of too much heat either. But, I mean, I watched the weather. It didn't get much hotter than 100 in Granbury, did it?
No, it was in the high 90s.
Right. No, but you guys have been, but, I mean, you guys were living a good life on the coast.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So, but then, see, if you ask her how many days in Texas, is it hot? She'll tell you it's like, oh, 300, it's hot all year round. I'm like, oh, no, it's not hot all year round. You know, it's hot for a few months, and then then it's enjoyable weather. It's great. And even when it's hot, it's still enjoyable weather. You just don't go out and freaking run a marathon or, you know, go out and do shit like that. Stay indoors. You know, and then all of a sudden she's an outdoor person. I'm like, oh. Since when are you an outdoor person? You look in the yard when you're in the backyard for snakes and spiders. And, I mean, if it's a big worm, you freak out and you have me kill it.
So you might be moving to Montana?
No, we're not moving to Montana.
You could buy a big spread up there. You could be a ranch owner. You could have your own ranch. You don't need to work on his ranch. Huh?
Mac.
No?
Do you hear what I said? We're not moving to Montana.
I don't know. You should keep an open mind. Montana, man.
Okay.
Montana's beautiful.
I got an open mind.
Have you been there? Montana's beautiful.
I'm not saying that it's not beautiful. It's a beautiful state. Hawaii's a beautiful state. California's a beautiful state.
Doesn't mean I want to live
but
there,
I'm not
right?
You know what? I'm not going to sit there and shovel freaking snow. You know, I don't want a snowblower in my garage.
You don't?
No.
I used to like snowblowing.
No, I don't.
Yeah, they make good snowblowers now, man. Those things, like, you could shoot it into the next county with the kind of snowblowers they have now. It's awesome. I like it. Yeah.
I'm not that guy.
I used to, there was a lady, she was like in her 80s, lived down the street from me. She used to get out and she used to sweep snow. And I remember when I first moved into this house, I looked, I'm like, actually it was 2004 when I got home. I got home in the middle of winter, like January, I think. And I look and this lady's sidewalk is like, it snowed and her sidewalk is clean. I'm like, who lives here? And why this act of aggression next, like a house away from me trying to make me look bad? So I get my two sons out. They're both teenagers. Let's go, boys. I don't know who lives in that corner house, but they're not showing us up. We get out there and we crush the sidewalk. We crush the walkways. We crush the driveway. So then it snows again. Same thing. I look. And so finally I see, like, I didn't know who lived in the house. I'm like, okay, another act of aggression. Let's go, boys. So I finally see her outside. I didn't know it was a woman. I see this person outside. And she's like a woman in her 80s with a bad knee. And she's got her broom. And she's sweeping the snow.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, really? That's how it's going to be, Grandma? All right. That act of aggression cannot stand against me. So I was doing my radio show. I used to go on the radio and trash talk this lady. She's in her 80s. Yeah, if you think that you're going to make me and my teenage sons look bad, you're out of your mind, okay? We're on to you. And people were calling like, are you talking about Mrs. Lemieux? Like, yeah, I'm talking about Mrs. Lemieux. So let me get this straight, Mac. You and your 17 and your 14-year-old son, you guys are shoveling, snow blowing, and she's sweeping, and you guys are on an even par? I'm like, no, we're a little bit better. They're like, you're a loser. Just shut up with that snow blowing stuff. But, I'll tell you, snow blowing's good for people.
Definitely.
Snow blowing's good for people, and it's good for your kids because you see the houses on your block that, you know, with people that are a little bit older that don't get out there and do it. You send your kids down with the snow blower or the shovel, and it's a good way to raise your kids, man. One of the things I love about the Midwest is you need each other for those kind of things.
Yeah.
And it promotes community. And so it's a good way to raise your kids. And I remember when I was a city councilman, a woman called my home, and she said, I need help from the city. And I said, why? What's going on, ma'am? And it just snowed. And she said, well, my husband's got a heart condition, and we had a guy come, and he plowed the driveway and everything. And then the snow plow came and just stacked, like, 4 feet of snow and ice in front of the driveway, and my husband's got a heart condition. And she said, can the city come back? And I said, they won't come back. I said, I'll be over there in 5 minutes. Patrick laying on the couch. Yo, let's go. What? You're going to go be a man. So it's stuff like that that is, I think, very cool about communities and how kids get tied to communities and how they get raised to do good things and things like that. So I think snow's a good thing, man. I think you should move to Montana.
Okay, let's change subs again. Hey, did you watch that Frontline thing?
No, I did not. I was in a bad space last night. I watched the Cubs. I went to bed.
Man, you gotta watch that thing.
Then I woke up at
the Yemen part. The Yemen part afterwards is.
Introduce what you're talking about to everybody. Tell everybody what you're talking about.
That whole front line from PBS on Mosul, and then it goes into Yemen, the war that's been going on in Yemen that hasn't been in the news, so no one knows that's going on. But the people are suffering malnutrition and disease. It's just, Saudi Arabia is bombing the shit out of Yemen. And, so now the hatred for America grows even stronger because they're not dumb. They know that they're getting their planes and they're getting their munitions and everything from America.
Yeah.
For a big arms deal.
Yeah. Yemen, it's a proxy war between the Iranian-backed Houthis and the other side, that's backed by Saudi Arabia. It's on Saudi Arabia's border. And so it's Iran destabilizing the region, which is what they love to do. And so it goes. And Mike's right. We don't see. What do you see? There was a drone strike in Yemen today. Wah, 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 wah. That's what we know about it. Was that SEAL killed in Yemen? Was that Yemen or Somalia? I think it was Yemen.
I think it was Yemen.
And so that's when we hear it. Otherwise, but it's just like what are these Green Berets doing in Niger? Well, it's what Green Berets do. They work with local. They work with developing militaries that ask for our assistance. They go there and they try to teach them the law of land warfare. They try to teach them this all the stuff that Mike has taught in his life. They go and they teach that stuff. That's what Green Berets do, and. I'm going to ask you a question, Mike. So four guys get killed in an ambush in a part of the world that we're not fighting in. When you hear that, what thoughts go through your head?
Well, the thoughts for everybody are the first thing is, what are we doing in Niger?
Right.
And again, it's the successes that go unheard of. The Green Berets have done great things all over the world, strengthening countries so that they don't become like Yemen, like a proxy war for other governments to take advantage of. We step in and we help them build an infrastructure for their own self-defense and all land warfare, and then they support themselves, and then there never is an issue because they're a successful country. Those things never go reported because there was those successes.
Well,
and then now it's the failures of what are we doing there?
Yeah.
What's our interest there?
Our interest is when they leave places like Afghanistan, when they leave places like Mosul, and they look for some place to go, where do they wind up? They wind up in places like Somalia and Niger, and if you're there now helping them to develop, guess what? Hopefully you'll know about it. One of the things I think, though, when I see stuff like that, There are no coincidences in the world. I learned that in Iraq in 2004. There are no coincidences. If you think that this was just some kind of firefight that they got into with rebels, then I have some swamp land in New Mexico that I want to sell you. Okay? I don't know who sold these guys out, who told somebody where these guys were going to be and when they were going to be there, but somebody did. And then bad guys ambushed them. And so that's the way that stuff works. That's the way they do it. And so I don't know who did that, but they should find them and they should kill them. But these things aren't accidents. Okay, these things aren't accidents.
So
what were? Oh, so your PBS. So everybody, there's three episodes. One is the PBS, it's called PBS Frontline on Mosul. Mike said to watch that. And then there's another one called PBS Frontline Yemen. And then there's two versions of the Yemen thing. Mike says to watch both of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Open your eyes up. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, when you're a country such as ours, it's hard to turn our backs on people that, you know, that's what we should, you know, those are the things that we should be doing. And again, it's no different than, you know, the Saddam Hussein regime, you know. Yeah, we didn't, it was a bullshit war. We went over there for bullshit causes. But, you know, and what we really did initially was we freed people from that tyrannical type dictatorship.
Right.
You know, there is some pluses there. You know, and then the downfall was we had bullshit administrations that didn't follow through with their promises. You know, to American people and to them.
No, I absolutely. Look, you know, you can forgive the Bush administration for fighting that war. Saddam leaves, right? And we do the right thing for the Iraqi people. What's not forgivable is you somehow or other are going to do this magically according to Don Rumsfeld's new plan and throughout the war plan, and then the country begin to disintegrate. You still don't get the memo and send enough people to cool it out and hold it together, and then it simply disintegrates. And it's not only unfair to the American people who have paid with sons and daughters killed there, sons and daughters with, you know, amputations, brain injuries, post-traumatic stress. Okay, that's a small fraction compared to the Iraqi casualty list.
Yeah. Million.
And it's not right. It's not right. And now that thing has blown into Syria and destabilized the whole region. And so that's not right. You can't do that. And so it's just, I don't know. Okay, so on a happy note, hold on. Here's a gun email. I'm going to rescue your program today because Mac, I listened to your opening and those things needed to be said. I do believe the bar is so low now for American politicians. It's disgusting. I will say I was even surprised, given my low expectation of our politicians, that she did that. There's no reason for her to do that. She didn't help it one bit, and I find it absolutely disgusting. I appreciated your words earlier this morning. My question is, if the gunner could go hunt one thing in one place, where would he go? What would his dream hunt be? Ooh, that's an interesting one.
Ooh, that is a good one. My dream hunt.
Yeah, so as a hunter, first of all, let's talk about you as a hunter. What's your favorite type of hunting to do?
I like hunting elk or caribou. And
why?
That kind of thing. Because of the region where you go. It's mountainous, it's wooded, it's beautiful. It's, you know, it's just there. It's just the whole environment. Soaking it all in.
Right. I like pheasant hunting. I like walking. I like the dog out there. You're moving around. You're out in the fresh air. It's normally beautiful. And, I don't know. I enjoy that. I enjoy pheasant hunting. So if you had a dream hunt for you would be, you can only be, you know, one type of animal in one location, what would it be?
It would be, it would probably be kudu.
Kudu?
K-U-D-U.
What is that?
It's been a big game animal in Africa, South Africa. Kudu or a great eland would be my dream hunt.
Are you making
either one of those animals?
Are you making things up right? Oh man, the kudu, man! I've seen that on Disney stuff and National Geographic. It's got those horns that kind of spiral up. Wow.
Yeah, so beautiful, man.
Yeah, wow. And then what was the other one?
A great eland.
Great?
Yeah. Great eland.
Kind of same kind of thing. Now, do they both exist on the African continent? Where do they exist?
Yeah, they're both on the African continent.
Have you ever hunted?
Great eland, I think. No, I've never hunted a great eland or a tuna.
Have you ever hunted in Africa?
No, not animals. But a great eland would be, yeah. A great eland or, that's so funny.
Nothing. Nothing. I hit my funny bone on the table here. I hit my funny bone on the table.
But a kudu is probably number one.
A kudu. All right. Where would you do that? So you don't know geographically where you would do that. Or do you? You don't know
yeah.
a spot where you would do it.
Well, I mean, you go to South Africa. You know, I do like the kudu, man. You can get your permit in South Africa.
What kind of weapons do you have to use?
Oh, you bring big guns, man. Because
like, what's a big gun?
You know, 416 Rigby or, you know, big guns, 338.
Ooh.
Yeah, 300 Win Mags. Because it's not the animal. I mean, you can hunt little itty bitty gazelle, but you bring a big ass gun. It's not the animal you're hunting. It's the animals that are all around you. A freaking lion.
Ooh.
You know, if you're going to go out and shoot with a 270 and a lion pops up, you're food.
Yeah, I'm not going to slow
you
down.
You want to make sure you have a gun that can take care of any possibility. You know, Cape Buffalo, charging you or something like that. But, yeah. But kudus, man, that would be... Man, I'd have to get a taller ceiling to get a kudu, though. Those horns would go.
No, they are. They spiral. They're if you have watched the movie The Lion King, there's kudus in that movie. I can tell you that right now. Yeah. I've seen them in that movie. The here's another one. Mac, ask the gunner the same question, but confine it to the continental United States. Okay. Hey, gunner, same question, continental United States. Dream hunt,
continental United States.
Yes.
Would we throw Alaska in there or no?
Yes. We'll throw Canada and Mexico, NAFTA. We'll throw NAFTA in there.
Then I would probably go after a doll sheep.
Where?
Alaska.
Alaska. Have you hunted in Alaska before, or are you just looking at pictures?
Yeah. No, I've hunted in Alaska before. No, I already know. I mean, so I think after saying doll sheep, I think I take that back. The kudu would probably be number two.
Yes.
My number one would be a Marco Polo.
Isn't he dead? I saw him on a...
No, the sheep.
Oh, I saw him on a Geico commercial, though. The,
Yeah. Have you seen a Marco Polo?
No.
Oh, my God.
What is it?
Those things are freaking cool, man. The way their horns kind of spiral out.
Where does it live? I've never even heard of it.
They're like in the mountains in Turkey and,
ooh,
you know.
Look at that thing.
Kyrgyzstan. Yeah, those are way up in the mountains. Those things are beautiful. That's like the Olympics of hunting in Marco Polo.
It looks like a bighorn sheep, but on steroids. With the horns continuing, not just one, like a ram, but two, three. Pretty exotic looking. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, anywhere up there in the high, like Pakistan, you know, things like that, way up there in the mountains. Yeah, Marco Polo. And then if endangered species were off the list, I'd go after a snow leopard. Go to Tibet and back again, snow leopard.
Tibet?
Those are beautiful, too. Yeah, Nepal. Yeah, a snow leopard. Those things are something else, man.
What's special about them?
The way they look, and they're so damn rare.
Are they? They are beautiful. They're white or a light color with dark spots, and wow, they're beautiful animals. How did you get started hunting, growing up?
Just living in Minnesota, hunting deer and pheasant and ducks and geese and.
Your dad a hunter?
He did, but I mean, family and friends.
They would take you?
Yeah.
Dusty Baker will not return as the manager of the Washington Nationals in 2018.
Good.
So, there you have it. Yeah, they're taking that loss pretty hard. And I don't know that you could blame that on him. That disaster that happened to them in whatever, the eighth inning, that was incredible. Not entirely his fault, but he contributed.
And the polar bear. If we were talking about North America, I'd go after a polar bear if they weren't under the endangered species list either.
All right. Here's an interesting email, and you're a Minnesota boy, so you'll be able to do this. Mac, can the gunner relate to the audience the enthusiasm for two things? One, the deer opener in Minnesota and the walleye opener in Minnesota. Could he explain the cultural significance of those two events on the calendar in the great state of 10,000 lakes?
Well, deer opener, it depends. I mean, like in Texas, deer opener is a huge thing too. Mm. Kansas is the big thing. I mean, anywhere there's a big population of deer hunters, that's a big thing. The one thing that's really kind of unique though is like walleye. When walleye come into season, you can start fishing for walleye. You know, not ice fish form, but the other one. So walleyes, like, it's an odd looking fish. I think it's part of the perch family. Great tasting fish. Excellent tasting fish, but that's a big deal, man. I mean, people talk about that a lot. Get ready to do it.
The governor goes out and hunts and they broadcast live. Yeah, I remember Jesse Ventura. The governor got his line. He's throwing it in. And you're like, are you kidding me? They're like covering the governor, catching walleyes on the opener. But it's a big deal. And, you know, a lot of communities, schools out on the deer opener. It'll open on a Friday.
Yeah, north. Yeah.
Yeah. And school's out. Like, why are you home? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, because so many kids don't show up
because
it's the opener, you know, so.
So why not?
I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, when I was hunting elk in Colorado, you know, big day, the opener the next day, you got there a couple days before and get acclimated to the high altitude. And then, on opener, we're out there before the sun's coming up. We get in position and, literally the sun came up. The guide looks at me and goes, okay, we're good. And I was like, okay. Right across this gorge from me was this big cow and, big cow elk. And so I was looking and I put it up on sticks and pow, took the shot like minutes into opener and dropped this cow. And then, that was a good day because that was the first elk of our hunt of our season. So we ate the back straps and the tenderloin that night. It was like, oh yeah, good.
Did you, how do I say this? Do you mount those heads? Do you have them all on your I Love Me wall?
No, the wife's not into dead animals hanging on the wall.
She not?
No.
All right.
But I do have an elk, head. I just don't, she doesn't know. I mean, it's not like I have it hanging up in the house, but it's not here at the house. My buddy down in Austin's got it. I'm going to bring it up one day as soon as I can make it. Like, hey, look at it. Have her come home and see this thing hanging on the wall. What?
In the,
what?
In the living room over the fireplace. Don't even tell her. Just put it up.
No, this is a great place for that. Right now we got a big, huge Texas star hanging on that wall.
Oh, really?
That would be a fantastic place, yeah.
She'll love it. Yeah, and then just act like you don't, like, what? Oh, that?
That's been up. That thing has been up there for months.
Yeah, it's been up there for 3 months.
Oh!
And then you need to be recording that, like they recorded you with your glasses. Oh, which brings me to an email. Hey, Matt, can we get an Enchroma update from the Gunner? What has he seen this week that dropped his jaw? Yeah, Mike, everybody wants to know.
I'm so used to now, it's like...
Oh, it's no big deal anymore?
Like, yeah, I'm like, I can see color now. What's kind of neat was when my friends of mine here, I've let them use them, and that with their colorblind, they get the same reaction, like, oh, my goodness, oh. So a couple of people here in town are buying them, you know, after looking through them, because they're just like, I cannot believe this. So
people that are colorblind.
Yeah. It's a big deal, man. You will never understand. No. You won't understand.
No, we can't, right? We can't. Only people that share that condition could obviously understand.
That suffer from that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's a good deal. It's things are great. I mean, I love having them on, driving around. But now it's kind of like, you know, I think all the newness is kind of gone. I haven't been to like the botanical gardens or a museum yet, but we'll see. Hey, can you believe it's already October 20th?
Yes.
It's freaking crazy to me, man.
Yeah, my daughter's in, my daughter went to Europe. I think I told you she went to Europe and, she's in Paris right now. And she went by herself. She's got three cousins that are over there going to school. So she's going to visit them, but she's bombing around Europe, by herself, doing the whole thing for less than like $1,500 too. For about 11 days.
Well, see,
hostels. And stuff like that.
My wife's birthday is on October 14th. So,
ooh.
You know, so we just had her birthday last week.
Yeah.
And, so for literally like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, she's 2 years older than me. So, oh my gosh, I never let her forget that for the 2 weeks. You know, cause my birthday comes up here and, you know, in literally like 2 weeks.
Well, tell her we said happy birthday.
Milk it. Yeah, I got to milk it for everything it's worth.
Really?
And remind her every day. Yeah. Oh, you know, you're 2 years older than me. And then, 2 weeks later, it's over with, so I got to take advantage of it.
Here's another question. Mac, do you guys have big plans coming up? Marine Corps birthday not too far away. Mike, do you go to anything for the Marine Corps birthday?
I go to, I'll go to a cake cutting ceremony. On Veterans Day, November 11th, we're going to a banquet, like a dinner here in town. They have a Veterans Day thing every year.
I'm supposed to speak at a birthday ball at Pendleton.
Who's?
Hold on. One of my Marines sent me an email and said, "Hey, sir, this is like months ago. Would you be our guest speaker at our ball?" I'm like, "Yeah, good one." And he said, "No, I'm serious." I'm like, "Why would you want me to speak?" He said, because. He said, you're a good officer, you're a good speaker, you started All Marine Radio. I think you have a great message for young Marines. So, Mike, what message should I be, should I have for young Marines? Taking responsibility? All right.
Yeah, what that means, not only what that means in the military as far as leadership, but, how you, that carries on throughout your whole life. And, too many times the words that we say in the Marine Corps really don't mean a lot. It's your actions that really really sound and echo into eternity.
Oh, yeah, lay a little maximum on them, Maximus on them. VMM 164. Known as the Knight.
Oh, what's that?
Known as the Knight Riders. Osprey Squadron out of Pendleton.
Oh, for crying out loud.
No, they're out of Miramar, I think.
An Osprey Squadron.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, I said, come on, I don't want to talk to those guys. He said, yes, you do, they're Marines. I said, they're not infantry Marines, though. He goes, don't go there with me. I said, what's it been like? Has it been an interesting experience? And he said, yes. He said, look, it's a different world. He said, they don't grow up in our world. So, it absolutely has been interesting. He said, but that's one of the reasons I want you to come. I want to expose them to more people from a different world. And he said, it'll be good for him. I said, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, responsibility. That's what I'm going to talk about. That's what I'm going to talk about. Any other hints for me? Don't be long, right? Be like, what, 5 minutes maybe?
Be long. Yeah, don't be long. And just tell a story.
Should I be funny?
Don't read a speech. Speak from the heart.
I'm not a speech reader. I'll walk up there with a piece of paper, and it will have it'll probably have like 4 bullets on it, and that's just so I think if you're a decent public speaker, you know what you're going to say. The things that you say, you tend to say on a regular basis, so you
right.
You know the bullet starts with, you know, blah 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 in Iraq. And you begin to tell that story, and then you weave it into another one, and blah, blah.
Like when I did the birthday ball speech for School of Infantry, they asked, it was funny. Someone asked me, like, hey, prepare a speech. And I said, no. And they said, what are you going to talk about? I said, I don't know yet. And it was like the next day. And they're like, dude, you haven't even. And I said, when I get there.
It'll come to me.
It'll hit me.
Right.
Yeah. And I said, I have a 3x5 card that basically outlines the whole. You know, hey, reminds you, you know, yeah. How you start off, you know, right. I want to take this minute to thank, you know, everybody here, and, you know, talk about these certain people real quick, and thank you for letting me be a part of this, and then, you know, then your little closing remark, but all that in between, you just let it go.
Right.
And then they appreciate that, because they know it's not a canned, you know, they know it's not a canned, rehearsed, you know, regurgitated type of thing. It's from the heart. It means something. That, yeah.
All right. I'm taking notes. I'm writing it down. Some people, do you enjoy public speaking, Mike?
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I do too.
I still do it.
Yep.
I'm speaking to, I'm giving a speech to the Daughters of American Revolution here in North Texas.
That's a. I'll tell you what. They're a big time organization. They have a big time building right down on the mall. Right across from the mall in Washington D.C., the huge old, looks like the Supreme Court. Like, what's that? And you see above the pedestal, Daughters of the American Revolution. And I went and spoke to them in North Dakota. And there, while I'm there, I meet a woman who was a nurse at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, Agnes Scher.
Yeah.
Tells a crazy story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I love is you meet people and they say, oh, let us introduce you to Agnes. I'm like, hi, Agnes, how are you? And like, Mike, Agnes was at Pearl Harbor on the USS Solus in the bay when the attack started. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
What? And she tells you this story that's, and I'll tell it to you in 60 seconds. She grows up in Botno, North Dakota. It is on the Canadian border in the center of North Dakota, like all the way north. She used to look in magazines, and she wanted to travel the world, and she knew her parents wouldn't let her unless she could be safe. And so she knew if she joined the Navy as a nurse, she'd get a career, could see the world, and the Navy would keep her safe, and her parents would say yes. And so she joins the Navy. She enlists in the Navy in 1938 and goes to Great Lakes Naval Training Center. And then is out in the Pacific and winds up on the USS Solus on December 7th, 1941, and tells this crazy story getting ready, rolling bandages before formation at like 07:45 when the first explosions, around when the first explosions hit. They thought it was a drill, blah, 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 blah. And then they looked out the porthole of the ship and they saw a Japanese Zero flying by with the pilot looking at their ship going, oh, my God. And then they started taking casualties on board and treating them. And you're just sitting there going, and here's this lovely white-haired woman, right, Mike, living in North Dakota, and she's an American hero and piece of American history.
Yeah.
So I love going those things and meeting all the different people that show up, and after you speak, they approach you, and it's always, to me, a very cool experience. Interesting. All right, any big plans for the weekend?
I think we're having a barbecue tomorrow over at Ron's house.
What are you going to, oh, Ron. So Ron will be doing it? Who's putting it on, you or Ron?
No, Ron, another mutual friend, Steve, he smokes the brisket and everything.
Oh, really? That's a big deal, man. Brisket smoking in Texas, man. You don't want to screw that up, right?
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. You'll man, be... that is good, man. God, I love brisket.
What do you, when, with brisket, what do you have? What do you like, the coleslaw? Yeah. What do you like to?
Yeah, coleslaw, brisket, and beans is my favorite.
Yeah, and then at the end of it, when you have a little bit of everything left, that's some good stuff. Yes.
Yeah, the brisket afterwards.
Yes.
Ugh.
Yes. All right. All right, man. First of all, thanks for coming on today. I appreciate it.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
There you have it. The one and only Michael Musselman on a Friday, the Gunner, the one and only Mike Musselman. That's right. From the great state of Texas.
Nice. How? Explain. Big brand went up 12%. It's always good. Even when you lose, I win. You see what I'm saying? Big baller brand, we here to stay.
I'll
tell you what, Lonzo did good.
How? What game were you watching? How did he do good? Well, how did he do good?
This is Stephen A. Smith and LeVar Ball after his son didn't do well and in his opener with the Lakers. They got beat by, 20-something points? And so the father is somewhat of a character. He's positioned himself to take on the NCAA with his younger son who's still in high school. So that's what that little comedy act was. All right. On a Friday, have a great weekend. If you're a praying type of person, you might want to say a prayer for the country. It's not in very good shape. It's not in very good hands. There's a few people that I would tell you are up to it, but good God, you know, what we see on a daily basis is pretty discouraging. So, Phil Matt 11. Have a great weekend. Keep the four families of those Green Berets in your prayers over the weekend. Pray that they have the strength to get through the difficult days ahead of them, not only as they deal with the remains and the ceremonies relative to funerals, but the packing away of clothes, the coming to grips with they're never coming home again. Your father's never going to come home again. What's going to happen to us? All of that. Not an easy road. And pray that their community continues to embrace them and gives them the love and support that they need. Want to thank Kim Holmes for being patient this morning. And want to thank the Gunner for coming on as well. Most of all, thank you for listening and making All Marine Radio a part of your day. Truly appreciate it. This program will repeat itself right now. And I'll just kind of close on something that I started with. I would give that representative in Florida every benefit of the doubt relative to her intentions. But if, in fact, the President of the United States made a mistake in something that he said or in his attempt to communicate something, it came across poorly. any person there has one obligation, in my opinion, and that is to ease that burden on that family. And the way you do that is you don't go out and hold a press conference. You pick up the phone and you call the White House chief of staff and say, that didn't go, I think, the way you wanted it to go. So the fact that the person who did that is an elected representative of the United States government is pretty sad. And as I said, I don't know her. I don't know anything about her. And, you know, it could have been another, very easily could have been another elected official in this country. My point is that how low have politicians in this country sunk when your first instinct is not to lighten the load of a family that's just lost their husband or father? I guess I don't get it. I probably never will. So have a great day. I'll leave you with that thought. Keep our country in your prayers. On a Friday, All Marine Radio, over and out.